Blog Talk Radio.
It is Kelly here. Good morning, 6:15. And I was just going to go over a little bit of stuff related to the Passover and Easter and everything. In the meantime, let's go over some headlines. John Kerry, one more day of this negotiation with Iran. Washington Post, why Obama chose Iran talks to take big risks of presidency. That's a pretty good article. I think I would see, and this is what the Washington Post said, that the reason that Obama chose this fight, this issue going into Iran and getting a deal from these guys is because I think that a couple of reasons. Number one, he needs something historic for his presidency. There's been a lot of criticisms of this president's, his leadership. One way to deal with that would be to achieve something historic. I think a second reason is it is an opportunity for Obama to be able to get up and do something and say, these were my ideas. This is the way that I wanted it done. I've got a dog in this fight or whatever. I'm committed to this. And so it is an opportunity for him to say, you know, you can deal with the Middle East. You can, you can create friends out of enemies, kind of a thing. So there is a little bit of commentary from Howard Dean that I was surprised by. Howard Dean has always struck me as this person who is extremely, he's very ideological. He's very partisan. His party means everything, standing up for his party. And for that reason, I was a little bit taken aback that he had actually criticized the president's position and said that we should walk away from this deal right now because it seems like, to some people anyway, that we're too desperate for a deal. and I've got that coming up right here. But I think we should bear in mind as well that what's going on in the Middle East is there's an enormous amount of unrest, and so if you could get the Iranians into this incredible deal, then it would be possibly a way to kind of shake everything out. There is an enormous amount of criticism, though, of this deal, and the people on the right are seeing this as exactly the kind of thing that they dislike in the president, which is this kind of cowboy approach to diplomacy, where he kind of sets his own course and doesn't bring things through the Senate or the House, and instead uses his own people to kind of put the policy together. So get to that in just a second here. I'm just having a problem loading this thing, but some more headlines for you here. And what are your plans for Christmas, or not Christmas, but Easter? And how do you plan to celebrate it, or does your family celebrate it? I know there's an increasing number of people in the United States that have no religious affiliation, and I think that this is really having an impact on policy and such. And for example, I know there's a movement out there to get rid of the religious foundations of Alcoholics Anonymous, and to do it from a secular. I know one group was using kind of a Hindu or a Buddhist foundation for this, and you know, others are kind of humanist. And you know, one of the things about AA is it does have God in it, but it's not really religious in the, you know, it's not a Christian God. It's just this God who is you know, my higher power. So it's kind of notable how this is coming out. This I don't know if you want to call it modern paganism or whatever, but here's a clip from Howard Dean on his negotiations, and this is from Morning Joe Scarborough Show.
Much, Joe.
Howard Dean, let's bring you in to play everybody's favorite game now. We're on the Morning Joe set. Why is Joe wrong? I'm going to ask you this question.
Game.
We tried this yesterday with David Ignatius. He was only kind of halfway in.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a feeling you're going to go all in.
Yeah,
look at
him. He's ready.
So I'm going to say something, and you tell me why I'm wrong. I think John Kerry and Barack Obama are far, far too eager for a deal with Iran, and could actually get a better deal if they walked away from the table and possibly came back later. Why am I wrong, Howard?
I actually think you're right about
Damn!
That.
I well, can't I, get anybody to I, play I, this game.
I think you're wrong.
I tell you why.
Okay, tell me why, Howard.
Because, you know, I think the United States is negotiating from a much stronger position than we were 4 years
exactly.
ago.
Exactly.
And the reason for that is these guys are desperate to get rid of the sanctions. And what they did was reminded me of sort of a New York real estate person. You come in at the closing and you say, I'll take another 10,000 or else at the closing, right? Now that's maligning New York state real estate.
Not
people,
really.
But I've seen that from time to time.
10,000 is actually low, but go ahead.
So, you know, I am worried about this.
Yeah.
I do think it makes sense to be at the negotiating table. I think the rhetoric on Capitol Hill is silly.
What about from Israel?
Well, you know, Netanyahu is so discredited himself that I just don't listen to them anymore at all.
Yeah.
But I think Obama is right to try to get a deal. I'm worried about the way these negotiations have gone, and I think that Joe is right, probably a step away from the table and say, okay, you know, you're not backing off on sending you the uranium to Russia, and you're not, and we'll get rid of the sanctions at our own pace. I agree.
Howard, you really have stated my position, where I'm glad we're at the table with Iran. I don't know that we have a lot of great options, but we can get a really tough, transparent deal, Steve Rattner, the trust but verify slogan that Reagan coined back in the 1980s. I don't think we're anywhere near that right now, but I'll ask you the same question because you want to play this game.
All right, and that's how even Howard Dean is saying that this has gone too far. And so if Howard Dean is saying it, it is my impression that everybody feels that way in the Democratic Party, at least the center of the Democratic Party. All right, another story, and I don't know how much interest you guys had in it, but the other story was that they were protesting against this supposed gay law in Indiana. And here is the question: when you're talking about the battle in the culture, the culture wars, at some point, doesn't there have to be a line drawn between the people who are totally in favor of this, this new gay movement, new gay laws, gay marriage, gay adoption, and all that, and the people who say that I am personally opposed to this, and I don't want to support. For example, I don't want to be involved in a gay marriage, et cetera. Isn't there a point? I'm just asking because it would seem to me that
when a supplier of pipes, valves, and fittings,
well, for example,
the energy
if you forced a minister to
turns
marry
to Goldman
gay
Sachs
people, which
for
it
capital
seems like we
advice
could be going in the direction of
business expands,
wouldn't that
new
have to be something that the minister would at least have the right to say, I'm not going to do this, even if you want to throw me in jail?
A global network takes shape.
So, you know, and it's funny
millions
how
of people
much
get the energy they need.
When Ted called in yesterday,
and a company called MRC Global,
change there's been in public opinion in the last, say, 20 years. And what is the change made out of? Where did it come from? My guess is that it is related to the sex revolution. The sex revolution had its own kind of momentum, its own kind of logic, and one of the parts of it was that number one, sex wasn't just for marriage. Number two, people could live together. Number three, divorce was okay. Number four, single parenting was something that could be respectable. And so the upshot then is, if all those things are true, doesn't that kind of validate this gay movement? In other words, the place to draw the line for people who were defending marriage was 20 or 30 or 50 years ago. It seems like this is kind of a runaway train now, and I don't see how you would kind of get it back on the tracks. But anyway, here's Tom Cotton. Threat from Iran is not just nukes. Check this one out. Oh, Tom Cotton is the new senator from Arkansas.
So let's move off the Iranian nuclear program for a moment and maybe go to some wider issues, because the United States and Iran have some other points of contention that I think a lot of people worry about. A lot of people are concerned specifically about Iranian conventional military capabilities. I want to talk to you a little bit about that. So a lot of concern, maybe not as much about the in terms of conventionals, but I think they're important, specifically Iran's missile program. I know the Iranians are developing a lot of short, medium, and now some longer range weapons. Do you think the United States and its allies should be concerned about that?
I think we should be gravely concerned. I would not, though, distinguish between its nuclear program and all of its other weapons programs and its drive for regional dominance throughout the Middle East. The president and the United States government right now is compartmentalizing those discussions. Iran is not compartmentalizing them. There's a reason why over the last 15 months, Iran has become even more aggressive than it had been in previous years. Well, you've got Qasem Soleimani, the commander of the Quds Force on the ground in Iraq, leading Shiite militias that are undermining the territorial integrity and the power of the Iraqi government. Bashar al-Assad is even more of a client of the Iranian regime now than he ever was before. Basically, Iran is in charge of Damascus, and they're the only thing holding Syria together. In Yemen, you have outright war. You could have any day now a ground invasion by Sunni states united around Saudi Arabia and Egypt, because the Houthis, an Iranian-aligned Shiite militant group, have taken over the capital and are driving for the rest of Yemen's territory. Everywhere you look in the region, Iran is pushing for regional dominance. And if they do all that right now without a nuclear weapon, and they do it while they still have tens of billions of dollars of assets frozen overseas, imagine what they would do if they got a nuclear program, or nuclear weapon, I should say, and if they got all that money freed up. They would be even more aggressive, even more threatening. Again, this goes back to what Prime Minister Netanyahu said. If Iran wants to be treated like a normal nation, they should act like a normal nation. They shouldn't be trying to undermine countries throughout the region. They should not be the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism. And until they start acting like a normal nation, we should treat them as the grave threat that they are.
Okay. So moving off Iran for a moment, let's talk a little about sequester and the defense budget. Let's suppose, Senator Cotton, we aren't able to move defense dollars upward that much. Let's say through various budget maneuvers or whatnot, we're able to get to somewhere around $520 to $530 billion, over the $499 billion BCA defense caps. Do you think that would make a big difference in terms of maybe enhancing our military capabilities?
It would make some difference. I'm not sure I'd say it make a big difference. I support the National Defense Panel recommendation of a $611 billion base budget as a floor, not as a ceiling. And I recognize the defense base budget should probably be tens of billions of dollars before that. That's why Marco Rubio and I offered an amendment to the budget last week that would have called for almost $700 billion of new spending. The reason the National Defense Panel cited that $611 billion figure as the floor is that what Robert Gates projected we would need in 2016 when he submitted his budget in 2012. First, Secretary Gates had a reputation and several accomplishments as a defense reformer, so he had already found lots of savings and efficiencies. And second, that was the last time the Department of Defense was able to engage in traditional strategy and threat-based budgeting before the Budget Control Act and sequestration caps took effect, as opposed to the budget-driven strategy and threat analysis we've seen over the last 4 years. So certainly any increase in defense spending would be better than where we stand now, but to address our readiness crisis, to address the drawdown, especially in the Army and the Marine Corps, and to address the pressing modernization needs that we have across the services that require long-term planning, especially in the Air Force and the Navy, we really need substantially more than $520 to $530 billion in the base budget. And that's what I'll continue to promote and push for internally in the Senate and externally, because I think the American people are leading elites on this question, because they recognize that when they around the world, when the world is in flames, as Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel said, or when we're in free fall, as the former Ambassador to Iraq James Jeffrey recently said, the concrete expression of America's retreat is our collapsing defense budgets.
That's pretty interesting, and it's hard to argue with that logic that one of the ways that you can tell where America's commitments are is how much money we're spending on defense, and there's kind of historic cuts coming to these programs, and we know that there's already been a lot of downsizing. Okay, so the argument against Iran is kind of the argument, the original argument by George W. Bush, which was that Iran was one of the three axis of evil, right? And so he was a person that he felt like, and I think subsequent events have proven him accurate, is that Iran is ambitious. Iran is influencing other countries. They want to extend their reach across the Middle East. And I don't see how what this agreement so far is going to do to stop that. As a matter of fact, it seems to me in a strange way it's going to lead to a nuclear weapon, and why we would have anything to do with cooperating with something that might lead in that direction is kind of mysterious. But what is this, this kind of moth towards the light approach that Obama has towards Iran, 523-1450, here's a little more George Strait. Kelly O'Connell. Kelly here, and so what do you think about all that? I mean, what do you think about the deal that's going on? I mean, we opened up the topic just the other day, and then I had somebody come by the house and bring me a book and say, tell me I needed to read this, and I was asking on people's view of the end times, and you know, what do you think is happening, I do think that it is an absolutely fascinating question as to, you know, well, you know, it's funny. I was going to say, you know, that the religious people have this kind of view that there's this kind of end times scenario, call it the apocalypse or Armageddon or whatever. And that is highly influential in the Christian church. But, you know, it's also influential in the Islam, which is why, if you boil it down, why Islam wants this bomb. I mean, if you were 100% serious about understanding Islam and the Iranian situation, I think what you would do is you would look into the theology of Iran, give them the credit for their sincerity on it, and just say what part of their theology is kind of, you know, motivating their actions. And one of the things of the time that we're living in now is that there are a strong argument against keeping religion out of government, which I think is, you know, at some level, America stood for not having a national church. That's the separation of church and state is in the original meaning, is not to have a national church. But I think that there's a lot of people who take pleasure or take it as a matter of faith. You shouldn't have any influence from religion in your thinking if you want to be a modern person, if you want to be, you know, realistic and everything. And I think the totally the opposite. You have to understand the theology of the Iranians. Whether you believe in God or not is not even an issue. You have to understand their theology. So they believe that they need to have an apocalypse or an Armageddon, an end of the world war to bring in this El Mahdi. And that would mean attacking Israel, according to, you know, and that's why one of their generals is, you know, kind of on record for saying we are not going to get rid of, I was about to say, we're not going to drop this bomb request, but don't want to throw out a bad pun there, but that we are not ever going to give up the demand to destroy Israel. Now, if America is the number one partner of Israel, if they're our number one representative in the region, how does our president go and make a deal with Iran that would possibly help them get a bomb? I mean, it's just, you know, at some level, it's just hard to fathom this. But here is a little discussion on why Congress itself is against the Iranian deal. 523-1450 to call in at 639. Kelly O'Connell Show.
At this juncture, I don't see a further extension being useful if they have not agreed to the basic formulation and the bottom line that the world requires. To have confidence that they're not pursuing a nuclear weapon.
That was President Obama in February saying negotiations with Iran really needed a basis. Now the negotiations are going on and they're being extended. The deadline has now passed. They're going at least one more day, likely into June, because the White House said the deadline really is a little arbitrary. We're back with our panel. George.
Well, it's important to view this against the really minimalist agenda we have, as opposed to the one he outlined there. In fact, we are not trying to block their path to a nuclear weapon. We're trying to make the path steeper and longer to a breakout period of no less than 1 year to get a nuclear weapon. Today, they began referring not to an agreement, but to an understanding that we were supposed to have. And I'm not sure what the difference is, but the news reports this morning said they were only differing about three things at this point: the duration of the restrictions on their nuclear activity, the lifting of the sanctions, and the inspections regime. That's everything. So I'm not sure what it is we're close to.
You know, speaking about that breakout, you have the former deputy director of the IAEA talking to reporters today, AB, saying that under the terms that are being largely framed right now with this discussion, they can't deliver on the administration and the president's promises here, as George just mentioned. Very specific that they're not going to be able to get to 1 year breakout time, even if they get what's on the table now.
Everyone is not surprised about the deadline being pushed. The momentum in Congress for some kind of influence over this process is only building. It's not withering. We don't think there's going to be a deal tomorrow morning or night, and Congress is going to come in and weigh in on this with a vote. They have almost, there are reports, they're three votes shy of a presidential veto-proof majority. I've heard it's actually a 66 or 65, it's 2-1, and that vote could end up being 85 once you reach that threshold. People come out. Congress is only getting more skeptical about this.
Let me interrupt you. That's why Secretary Kerry wants to come back with some specifics, something tangible.
Right, but they don't believe, because experts are saying that this is not verifiable and it's not enforceable, and that's causing the most concern. And George is right. All those things really matter. But when Iran just threatened, if there wasn't immediate sanctions relief, to walk away from the table, how much progress have we made?
Tucker.
Well, I mean, the key point is inspections, I think. I mean, that's how you verify that any of this is real. I think they went into it with a pretty weak hand, and they did so because they, in effect, took military action off the table, and they also demonstrated publicly that they prevented and would be willing in the future to prevent Israel from acting on its own. I'm hardly espousing a military attack on Iran. I think it would probably be unwise. But if the Iranians know that that's not even under consideration, then what motivation do they have to take you seriously? I mean, there has to be some credible threat there, or else you're dealing as peers, and that's the last thing you want.
Senator Tom Cotton, who came under attack.
Well, we heard from Cotton. So the Congress cannot be in favor of this, because at some point there has to be a recognition of the fact that this could lead to war. And, I mean, anyway. All right, so this is depressing. I realize that. I played a clip yesterday, a crank phone call, from a guy by the name of Ricky Smiley, who I think is a DJ in Atlanta, a comedian. And here's another one from him in honor of April Fools. Here's another one from him. He's calling churches chicken and pretending to be a woman. This one out.
Thank you for calling churches, Chris.
Who's y'all pastor?
Who is our winner?
Who's y'all pastor?
This is Church of Chicken.
This ain't the church?
No.
What's your name, baby?
Huh?
What church is this?
This is Church's Chicken. This is a restaurant, man.
Oh, y'all don't have prayer service?
No, this is Church's Chicken, a restaurant, man. Yeah, they're on churches.
Oh, well, what time is y'all service?
Man, yeah, this is not church. This is not church. This is Church's Chicken.
Well, it say church?
Yeah, church? It's Church of Chicken.
Well, don't the chicken belong to the church?
No, ma'am.
Well, what time y'all open?
What time we open? We open at 10:30.
So y'all start like at 11 o'clock?
Yeah, we start serving chicken at 10:30, ma'am.
Well, what about Sunday school?
Yeah, this is not a church.
What's your name, baby?
My name is Chris.
Well, have you been born again?
Huh?
Let me pray for you, bow your head. Lord, help Chris, Lord. roll down and fry the chicken in your name, Lord, with mashed potatoes and okra and corn and all that stuff they be serving, and that they get 10% of you, amen. Well, we'll be up there, me and all my members here.
Okay.
Praise God.
Stupid. It is Kelly here at 6:48, and I want to get into this issue of the gay law in Indiana, but I've got a devastating critique here of the Iranian policy by Bill O'Reilly. I wanted you to hear and get your feedback on 523-1450. If it were to play. All right, here we go. It is just a radical critique of this president, and I think devastating. And I really wonder, and here we go. I wonder what the law is.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. Trusting President Obama, that is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. The mullahs in Iran are well aware that Barack Obama is a weakened president. At this point, the trust factor is going against him. A recent Quinnipiac poll asked registered voters, who do you trust more to make decisions that are good for the country, President Obama or the Republicans in Congress? 42% say Obama, 47% Republicans, 11% don't know. A new Fox poll recently asked, do you think honest describes President Obama or not? Yes, it does, 43%. No, it doesn't. 54% don't know, 3%. Also, about a third of registered Republican voters say President Obama is more of an imminent threat to America than Putin. So it seems Mr. Obama has a trust deficit right now. That makes negotiating anything much harder for the USA. Again, the Iranian mullahs, who are tyrants and human rights violators, well understand that Mr. Obama needs a deal with them. Another foreign policy failure will erode the president's standing even further. So there's deep suspicion among many Americans that any deal with Iran will be bad for us. And no matter what Secretary of State Kerry brings back, that suspicion will remain. When Barack Obama took office more than 6 years ago, the nation was filled with hope that a young politician would bring creative solutions to vexing problems. Instead, Mr. Obama has tried to impose an ideological agenda that has alienated the opposing party Republicans and brought the nation into political conflict. Recently, I asked former Congressman Barney Frank what President Obama's main domestic accomplishments have been outside of Obamacare, which is still being litigated, and the economy. By the way, I noted to Mr. Frank that American workers are still earning significantly less than they did 6 years ago, so all economic analysis is subjective. Barney Frank could not name another accomplishment. Then I asked two Democrat foreign policy experts to name Mr. Obama's primary accomplishment overseas. They came up with Myanmar, Burma. That's it. So if all Americans step back and take a hard look at the Obama administration, there don't seem to be many achievements. There is, however, chaos overseas and a lack of trust here at home. It is a sad state of affairs when thugs in Iran have more power at the negotiating table than the United States of America.
All right, so that was kind of devastating. And if you disagree, then 523-1450, Frankie, et cetera. All right, going to shift gears a little bit on this question of this gay law, but I don't know how much the interest there is in this stuff. Israel military action still an option in Iran? Putin threat of nuclear showdown over the Baltics? Newly assertive Russia is shocking Norway. The FBI warns of cyber attack on Israel. And there is a bird that they found, a teeny tiny bird that flies all the way across the Atlantic, not from Europe to America, but from basically North Canada down to the down to South America. And Germany is still struggling to come to grips with the pilot's deliberate crash. Now, he was under basically a suicide watch, or he was dealing that the psychiatrists were dealing with him on the issue of being fixated on suicide. And there were, so obviously anybody in this country is going to say he shouldn't have been flying. I don't know how they look at it in Germany, but I can't imagine anybody anywhere is going to come to the conclusion that this guy should be behind the wheel of a plane when he's thinking about suicide all the time. There is a recording that was made at the end of that crash that was absolutely riveting, and you could hear people yelling, and there's actual film of the plane as they're coming down. You could see the wing touched the ground a little bit right before they eventually crashed into the ground. They're going 500 miles an hour. They now have a plan for people to live, or the super rich believe that they will be able to live till they're 500 years old. And they're trying to, in the meantime, get personalities, figure out how to turn personalities into a digital signature so that they can be put into robots. So people can live together through that. So anyway, kind of interesting. Here's a little more George Strait, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 at 6:54. We'll be right back.
I'll be looking for a playful that day, and I hope that judge ain't blind. I'm a rope I'm holding, I'm a rope on my mind.
And Kelly here. So I'm looking at this article, by the way, Blood Moon with Total Lunar Eclipse, an eerie biblical message rising over U.S. Easter weekend. So we'll get back and talk about that a little bit. But what do you think about this law that would allow people to not have to render services or do business with gay people? Now, is that right? Is it wrong? Now, how would you even know somebody was gay who came into your business in the first place? I think this law is the kind of law that they're trying to get rid of the punishment for people who don't want to take pictures or do floral arrangements or bake a cake. But do you think we're coming to a day when no minister can avoid doing a marriage for gays without landing in jail? 523-1450. Or do you think there's going to be a pushback? do you think that possibly people are kind of over the political correctness? Do you think political correctness is kind of peaking right now? Just kind of curious, you know, at 6:58, but it's still getting a lot of play out there in the media and people trying to, what I find bizarre is that you've got governors of one state, Connecticut, saying they're going to boycott this other state, Indiana, for this law that they just voted for. In the meantime, the law that they have in Indiana, or in Connecticut is even worse. So we'll take you out here with some George Strait, Kelly O'Connell at 6:59. We'll be right back after the break on the hour. KOBE.
I'm a little by morning, up from San Antonio. Everything that I got is just what I've got on. I ain't got a dime, but what I got is mine. I ain't rich, Lord, I'm free. Amarillo, my morning. Amarillo is where I'll be. Amarillo, my
it's Kelly here, 523-1450-706. I want to thank Rossin's Builder Supply for sponsoring the show and Ben Rossin for his weekly report. And all right, so today is the 2nd of April, April number 2, second day, 2015, and it's between 55 and 60 outside. Real pleasant. Lovely weather last night. All right, so let me ask you a question, and then I'll move on to a little news. Are you religious? Does Easter mean anything to you? And do you think that there was, for example, a Passover, that there was Jews in Egypt, that they were slaves, that they were brought seven signs or seven plagues to Egypt? Think that's all myth? Do you think the miracles in the Bible are myth? Do you follow Jesus? Are you in a religion? Do you believe in Easter? Do you believe that Jesus arose, you know, was killed and arose from the grave? Are you religious and it's all metaphor to you? It's all it's myths with important teachings in them? Or are you more of the atheistic or agnostic? All right, so with Easter coming up, here's a few more headlines for you. Senator Menendez indicted on a corruption charge. He says it's because he refuses to play along with the administration. 14 counts of corruption. Senator ripped Obama's Iranian policy at AIPAC. And EU is preparing antitrust charges against Google. Blood moon with total lunar eclipse to rise over Easter weekend. Cryptic biblical message. 11 teachers, administrators jailed in Atlanta cheating ring. Nevada brothel offering to host Harry Reid's retirement party. He's from Searchlight, which is a teeny tiny town in Nevada between Las Vegas and Reno. Then again, pretty much everything is between Las Vegas and Reno, which is about 400 miles on the road. And the looking for anything else you might find notable here. Future trips to Mars could take 39 days. Believe that? Mystery radio bursts from outside solar system follow mathematical pattern. Maybe it is somewhere. Somebody is doing typing out a code. This is Kelly. Thanks for the call. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. It's Mike.
Hey, Mike. What's up?
Hey, Kelly. Isn't the proper – is it Easter or is it Passover?
Well, isn't there a connection? I mean, one's Old Testament, the other's New Testament.
Well, Easter is a pagan holiday, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you have to understand that in the history of the church, there was an adoption of the church over pagan holidays. But I mean, basically, Easter, I would, you know, ancient pagans don't own our calendar, even if they built it for us. But
wasn't it Ishtar? Ishtar, though?
Ishtar, yeah. But I mean, Easter is its own holiday. I mean, it's not like the story of Easter was created to get rid of this some pagan event, you know?
And, Kelly, the other thing is...
Mike,
was wondering, Kelly.
Mike, are you trying to make a point?
Well, I'm just saying, it should be Passover. I mean, it's not Easter is Ishtar, which is a pagan holiday.
Well, Easter is...
You know, they used to go out in the groves and paint Easter eggs and have fertility orgies in the groves.
Well, I mean, whether there's any ancient foundation to these holidays, it doesn't mean that they don't have the meaning that people put on them, which is the resurrection of Christ. So do you not celebrate Easter?
I celebrate Passover. I don't celebrate going out painting Easter eggs and sexual fertility rites.
Mike, you don't have to do that stuff to celebrate Easter, do you?
Well, it's Passover, not Easter.
But why would you say that it could only be Passover and not Easter?
Because Easter is a pagan holiday.
No, I'm saying, Mike, that it was taken by the church and given a new mission. And why do you say that can't be done? Do the pagans own the calendar?
Well, do the Catholics own the Christianity?
Hold on one second. This is Kelly. I'll be right back. Mike, all right, anyway,
yeah.
go ahead.
You know, they may be the mother church, but they're not my mother.
I understand that, but, okay, so the Catholic Church, whatever. The point is that there's this story in the New Testament, and it was my understanding that you considered yourself to be a Christian. Why wouldn't you celebrate Easter?
I celebrate Passover, not Easter.
But Passover is an Old Testament tradition. Are you?
Yeah, but Christ said he didn't do away with the Old Testament. He says the New Testament fulfills the Old.
Do you follow the 600 laws of the Levitical Code?
No, because Christ said it's the spirit of the law, not the letter.
Then worry about the spirit and start celebrating Easter.
Passover, Kelly. Easter is Ishtar, a pagan holiday. And the other thing I like to say is, with these, with the gay mafia, if they have so much chutzpah, why don't they go and go into a Muslim bakery and force the Muslim to bake them a cake for their gay wedding? If they're so brazen and bold, you know, it's like these comedians. They won't touch Muslim jokes, but they'll rag on the Christians all day.
Well, they won't even joke about Obama. But listen, I got another caller. Can you call back in a few? Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. It's Hugo. I just wanted to give some information to Mike.
Go ahead.
Both Passover and Easter are biblically based. Passover in the Old Testament, where Moses was trying to liberate the Jews, and one of the Pharaoh's directives was to kill all the firstborn Jewish, and those who painted their doors with lamb's blood, the angel of God passed over them, and that's why it's called Passover, and the Egyptians first, including Pharaoh's firstborn, was killed. So that's the Passover. Easter is the celebration of the resurrection of Christ. So if Mike is a Christian, he should definitely celebrate Easter. It would be like saying that, you know, I don't celebrate Christmas because, you know, people give gifts in it, where, you know, Christmas is a celebration of the birth of Christ. Those Easter egg things, and maybe from that pagan part that he talked about, but the true celebration of Easter is celebration of the resurrection of Christ, not Easter eggs. So it's definitely a holiday that, if he's a Christian, should definitely embrace Easter and celebrate it.
I agree with that. Now, do you believe in a literal or a figurative? I mean, you consider yourself religious, Christian? Do you believe in a literal or a figurative explanation of these stories?
You know, I believe that Jesus was a real person, and I believe that there was some kind of connection. I don't know. I really don't. That's one thing in faith that I struggle with. I don't think it diminishes, though, the faith. You know, I believe that there's a God, a higher power out there, and Jesus, whoever he was a force for good. But I don't know how, but I do believe he really existed.
All right, so Jesus did exist, but he was more of a good person than he was God incarnate or something like that.
Well, you know, I don't discount miracles because I do believe in miracles. I've had some miracles in my own life, and I've seen them with other people.
Well,
so
there's
a possibility.
Let me ask you this. Give me an example of maybe the most remarkable thing that you could tell the audience about that happened that you consider to be a miracle.
I consider it to be a miracle that, you know, a child that all medical authorities have given up for dead, that is not going to survive X number of more days, that the power of prayer and people that are very faithful, the child comes out and, you know, is alive and has no lasting issues with the disease. That happened to me myself when I was 2 years old. That, I think, is a miracle. I don't know what else you would call it, something like that.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a miracle to me. I'm always wondering, I mean, I've never read a book on miracles. I've kind of looked for it before, but it seems like there's remarkable events in history that defy any clear scientific explanation, and it would be interesting to hear a bunch of these stories and then how people reacted to them, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you 100%. I've never read a book either, but you hear anecdotally, you know, about miracles happening, and when there's no explanation, no logical explanation, well, what else can you fall upon? You know, it's a miracle, is an unknown.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you go to church?
Occasionally, no. I grew up in a very, very Christian, strong Christian background. And I think probably through college I went to church. I went to a Catholic university. And I was very faithful then. And as I grew older, I think I became more spiritual internally. Not needing, I believe, the church. I still, I occasionally watch religious programming. I don't mind listening to, you know, religious programs on the radio or television. But I'm not an active church goer. But I think I do have a very strong personal internal faith.
And God, you believe in a God, a creator God,
yeah,
and all that?
I do. I really do. I don't. You know, I'm. I'm. I. I my whole career and my education background has been in science, but I still have a very strong belief in a higher power. I can't see how, randomly all that we see around us could have happened.
Yeah. Now, the universe is supposed to be 100 billion galaxies and inside of that 100 billion stars each. So the scale of it is so epic. And to think about all of it being compressed to the smaller than the size of a pinhead, and then there's this explosion, and very quickly the planet, they have just announced the planets were formed very quickly. So it more and more the universe seems like it resembles something that was created, and yet it seems like the more we discover, there are cosmologists that double down on this stuff. Stephen Hawking's, we now know there is no God. I mean, so, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. In fact, I think the latest I've heard is that that Big Bang theory is falling out of favor now.
And they have this kind of cyclical universe?
Right, right. Yeah, something okay. like that. I haven't gone in deeply to it, but I do believe my mind at least can't comprehend that this couldn't have been done without a higher power. So.
Others may disagree,
and that's fine.
I agree with that. Well, I got to take a break. Was there anything else?
No, that's all. Thanks, Joe. I just wanted to give Mike some facts and help him in his Christianity.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks for chastising Mike. Thanks a lot. All right, Mike. Shame on you. Ishtar, 523-1450, it is 719, and we have got here, well, let's just go to break, and we'll be right back.
So as my personal financial psychic, I'm sure you know what this meeting is about.
Yes. A raise.
I'm letting you go.
I knew that.
You see, this is my Amerivest managed...
Balances.
No, portfolio. And if it doesn't perform well for two consecutive...
Gold.
Quarters.
Quarters, yeah.
Then Amerivest gives me back their advisory...
Stocks.
Fees.
Fees.
And I feel like if you walk...
All
right, folks, it's time for your weekend forecast. It looks perfect. Scattered pressure washer showers.
It's going to be a great weekend to spend outdoors.
Got space.
So check out Lowe's.com for your spring. It's going to be a great weekend to spend outdoors. Lowe's. Never stop improving.
Totally. Let's get that shut down. But the four blood moons are supposedly. Let's see if this works here. All right. The four blood moons are supposedly a sign of the end of the ages. But here is from San Francisco CBS.
Total eclipse of the moon, presented by Science at NASA. It's deja vu all over again. For the third time in less than a year, skywatchers in the United States can see a total eclipse of the moon. The action begins at 3:16 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time on the morning of April 4th, when the edge of the moon first enters the amber core of Earth's shadow. For the next hour and 45 minutes, Earth's shadow will move across the lunar disk, ultimately covering the entire moon at 4:58 a.m. Pacific. East of the Mississippi River, the eclipse will be interrupted by sunrise. People can only see a partial eclipse. West of the Mississippi, people can see the whole thing, including totality. Totality is when the moon is fully inside Earth's shadow. Some total eclipses last for more than an hour. In this case, however, totality spans just 4 minutes and 43 seconds, a result of the fact that the moon is skimming the outskirts of Earth's shadow rather than passing centrally through it. The brevity of the eclipse highlights the importance of watching the clock. Be outside no later than 4:58 a.m. Pacific to witness the red moon. Why red? A quick trip to the moon provides the answer. Imagine yourself standing on a dusty lunar plain looking up at the sky. Overhead hangs Earth, night side down, completely hiding the sun behind it. The eclipse is underway. You might expect Earth seen in this way to be utterly dark, but it's not. The rim of the planet looks to be on fire. As you scan your eye across Earth's circumference, you're seeing every sunrise and every sunset in the world, all of them, all at once. This incredible light beams into the heart of Earth's shadow, filling it with a coppery glow and transforming the moon into a great red orb when viewed from Earth. The total lunar eclipse of April 4, 2015 is the third of four total lunar eclipses separated by approximately 6 months, a phenomenon astronomers call a tetrad. Such a closely spaced succession of eclipses is a fairly rare occurrence. The complete list of dates is April 15, 2014, October 8, 2014, April 4, 2015, and September 28, 2015. Set your alarm before sunrise on April 4th and enjoy the show. For more news about beautiful events in the night sky, visit science.nasa.gov.
Well, there was a beautiful little moon that was up this morning when I got up, and it was a little bit orangey and kind of low in the sky. Now, here is from... this is from space.com. Four blood moons, total lunar eclipse series, not a sign of apocalypse.
A tetrad of lunar eclipses, presented by Science at NASA. For people in the United States, an extraordinary series of lunar eclipses is about to begin. The action starts on April 15th.
I think this is just a reiteration of the last one. So, anyway, let's take a little stock here. There is also a water war that is really, they're really digging in on this water war in California, and the state is putting down laws to really cut back on water. And there's going to be a lot of farmland that dies out, a lot of vines and trees and stuff they're not going to be able to water. And they say it's the worst snowpack that they've seen since they started recording it. And they have looked in the history of the West of the United States and found that there have been extraordinary droughts past. And so this could be another one. All right, here's another story for you. Miracle dog rises from grave following failed mercy killing. That would be terrifying, wouldn't it? And that happened in... that is bizarre. Pullman, Washington, a dog who was hit by a car, struck on the head with a hammer and buried in a field, showed up 4 days later at a nearby farm. The dog, Thea, received care at Washington State University Teaching Hospital following the incident. It's believed someone attempted a mercy killing using a blunt item. And considering everything she's been through, she's incredibly gentle and loving. Well, maybe she had a near-death experience and realized that, you know, there's more to life than just chasing cars. All right. Thanks for calling the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's me again.
All right, Mike, here's your second blood moon. Go ahead.
Okay, you know, the gay mafia and this baker?
Yeah.
Or the pizza people, too. I mean, they're picking at people that have private businesses. Why don't they go after these huge corporations? They're hurting. They put this pizza guy out of business. I mean, does that make them happy?
Maybe it does. I assume that
it probably does. They're perverted, but...
I assume that if you're protesting somebody and you get and you put them out of business, you're happy. I mean, that's the whole purpose.
Yeah, if they are. They're a bunch of narcissists, psychos, and I like to say with the Christians do not believe that homos or homosexuals go to heaven, and I would say Muslims probably don't believe it either.
How do you define a homosexual?
Well. Someone that's gay, you know, that likes their
Do they swing both ways, or do they swing with each other?
Mike, I'm not asking for a a physical description. I'm asking you, are you defining somebody who practices it, or somebody who has an orientation towards it?
I think being a homosexual is a choice. I don't think people are born that way.
All right, so
And Dr. Carson, the brain surgeon, says that too.
Well, he says that jail turns people or prison turns people gay, but what about a person who's gay according to how you define it and they want to get saved? Hold on 1 second. This is Kelly. I'll be right back. I mean, what about opening up the church to gay people and saying, why don't you come in and, join our family? You can be saved and, we got a place for you.
It's up to them. It's between them and God, not them and the church, I mean, if they want to be gay, if they think, in the Bible it states, Kelly, that they will not enter the kingdom of heaven, someone is gay. It says it in the Bible, and that's supposedly God's word. If you're a Christian, you follow it, period, end of story.
Does that mean, though, in the society that you're allowed to not serve them or help them or, what is wrong with this idea?
You don't condone it. You don't enable them. It's not Hillary's fun camp.
Well, anyway, I wonder what percentage of people in the United States secretly are opposed to homosexuality, but I assume a certain percent wouldn't talk about it.
I would say, Kelly, for someone that wants to know how God feels about it, read Romans 1 or read Revelation 21, 8.
All right.
It spells it out right there, and it says who will enter heaven and who won't.
All right. Well, we'll have to get back and look at that. Well, all right, so I just lost the other caller. Mike, anything else?
Well, I'd like to see the gay mafia go into a Muslim bakery and force the Muslim to bake them a cake for their gay wedding.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mike. All right. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. This is Richard. The question you posed at the start of your program.
Yeah.
I think each one individually could take up a whole day, so let me just make one comment.
Go ahead.
As I recall,
could you restate Richard? Could you restate the question so everybody has it in mind?
Well, you had several questions about the Bible, the Exodus, the resurrection,
yeah.
Passover, etc. Just a couple of issues. Number one, apparently, outside of Exodus, there is no historical record anywhere that the Exodus happened. Certainly the fact that a pharaoh and 600-plus chariots of soldiers were drowned in the sea would have been recorded in Egyptian history because there's such a great deal of recording all their history. There's nothing there, so I think there's a big question. As to the Passover was when the angel of the Lord would pass over all of the Egyptian homes and kill the firstborn of each generation because the pharaoh's heart was hardened. The Jews leave.
Right.
So that just, I could go on. There are probably other people that wanted to talk. We had an interesting discussion. Go ahead.
You're the only one that's called in on it. So let me ask you this. Are you not religious or you don't follow the Bible or what is your belief?
I would say that I am a skeptic.
A skeptic. All right. So
yes.
What do you believe about the history of the universe and the origin of man?
Well, I guess I still believe that we go back to the Big Bang theory that seems to be the prominent one now, that maybe, 14 billion years ago, certain things happened. As to the origins of man, I think Homo sapiens, of which we are, I think appeared on Earth about 60 or 70,000 years ago. I think the story in Genesis is just an excellent way for primitive people to try and explain what they couldn't understand. And I think it's been shown that a lot of the stories in the, Genesis and Exodus, perhaps was an oral tradition for 1,000 years, wasn't written down until the Jewish intelligentsia had been taken to Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar, and that they picked up a lot of the old Sumerian writings, which had also a story of a creation and a flood. But I think what they do, to me, the
the Hebrew Bible is basically a history of the Hebrew people, not of the world. But it's of their view as they saw it. At least that's what I understand. I've not done original research. I just read a lot.
Well, very few people have done original research. Okay, Richard, I appreciate that. I got to take a break. Anything else?
No, good to hear you back. I listen to you off and on when I'm driving this time of day, but hang in there.
I appreciate it, Richard. Thanks a lot. And, well, have a good day.
You too.
Thanks a lot. All right, folks, we'll take a little little George Strait here. Be right back, 523-1450.
In Texas, there's a place I dearly love to be. But all my exes live in Texas, and that's why I hang my hat in Tennessee.
It's Kelly here. Good morning to you at 7:39. It is about 55 degrees outside. And we are talking about some different things, and one of which is we just got a phone call to point out that I had asked earlier if people felt like there was a is there a reality in your mind in the Bible's teaching we're coming up on Israel here, or is it more along the lines of a metaphor? And, you know, how do you see that? And so we've got some interesting calls, and I find it somewhat interesting that something that I've thought about is, you know, there is, according to Christian doctrine, there's only so many people that are going to be saved. And so the rest of the people, I mean, the people that are going to be saved, I guess, are going to be like Christians, Jesus, everything. The rest of them, what are they going to be like? Well, in an increasingly secular culture, they're going to be more pagan. They're going to be more, you know, non-Christian. And as the society becomes less Christian itself, I mean, bearing in mind that America was this experiment in building a Christian culture, Christian nation, we're going to get farther away from this kind of these biblical ideas. And so the question is, I'm looking at a crank phone call, by the way. This is, I'm not laughing at the topic, but what non-believers are going to be like. And it's kind of fascinating to think about it, where they say the Muslim population is going to triple. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, third round. Just one quick question for you.
The third blood moon has just called in. All right, go ahead.
Do you believe in a living constitution?
No. But I believe in – hold on. Let me just fill this out a little bit more. I believe that the common law gives the law and the natural law gives the law an ability to adapt to new situations. But I don't believe that the Constitution grows because – in the sense that the Constitution is said to grow by the left and progressives, it's really kind of cut back and it's horribly emasculated.
Kelly, when you say the experiment, are you referring to this country as an experiment?
Well, I mean, if you got into the heads of the Puritans and the people that were doing this stuff at the time, you would find a surprising level of scientific thinking, or at least approach. They're going to try this stuff and see how it works. It was thousands of years of church history that helped build the theories behind this. Hold on one second. This is Kelly. Who's this?
Hello, this is Bev Courtney.
Bev, I'll be right back. All right. So, so briefly, Mike, we got other people that may want to speak, but what's your point?
Well, what I was going to say is the Freemasons believe it was an experiment, and they think the founding fathers, this country wasn't founded on religious, you know, was not founded on Christianity, and this was a grand experiment. And the way I get the feeling now, they think it's a failed experiment.
Are you a Freemason, Mike? Are you a Freemason?
No.
I know you're going to quote Albert Pike.
I don't, Kelly, I wouldn't want any club that would include
hold
me.
Hold on, Mike. Unlike you, I have the ability to pull down the microphone on you. Are you a Freemason or not? I'm just curious.
I would not belong to any organization that would include me as a member.
All right. Thank you, Woody Allen. Thanks for the call. We'll talk to you later. All right. Thank you, Bev. What's going on?
Well, good morning, Kelly. I just wanted to say that I believe in Easter. I believe in the Passover. And the Easter is just a pagan name, but the Catholic Church redeemed it. So it represents redemption from something evil to something glorious.
Hold on one second. I know you're just getting wound up, but hold on. This is Kelly. Who's this?
Thomas.
Thomas, hold on. And who's this?
Hey, this is Rob.
I'll be right back. All right, Bev, wrap her up, though. Bev, I got three calls. I don't know who stirred the pot here, but give us...
Obviously, you did.
Yeah, okay, give us your best Easter statement briefly.
Okay, we're celebrating the life of Christ. He is alive in the heavens. And the Bible is the living word, not the Constitution. So if you humble yourself and you seek God, he will answer. And the proof, all creation proves that God is a God that is of order. The heavens, the moon and the stars are a sign for us. And, of course, it's no coincidence that Passover, Easter happened at the full moon.
Right, okay.
And
if you had one message.
Also, it's in our heart.
Hello,
it's in our heart.
Hello,
every child born the world over has the law of justice written in their heart, Kelly.
Can you hear me? What if you had one message for Mike, what would it be?
Mike? Just that if he humbles himself and looks at the history, you know, that he will find it's just redemption.
All right.
And
okay.
It's okay to call it Easter unless we change our calendar.
All right, Bev. Thank you and appreciate that. We'll talk to you soon. I'm running out of time. Can I take a break and then come back?
Okay.
Thanks. And I'll be right back. I just got to take a break. All right, folks, here is a little bit of weather for you.
Here's your Las Cruces.
And thanks for the call, Thomas. And what's on your mind?
Just a couple of points of clarity, if I may. You were using the term Christian nation. A nation cannot be Christian in the technical sense of the word. Individuals can have ideologies, but a nation cannot. And then to the question, I think it was Mike who was talking about the nation was founded as Christian. There's diversity, even in the beginning with the founding fathers, probably one of the most noted subset of Christianity, theism, Benjamin Franklin. So those things they might want to look up.
All right, I agree. A nation cannot be Christian in the literal sense, but I mean, I think a nation can be more or less Christian in its policies. Don't you agree?
Yes, if you want to talk principles and or policies, then that would be accurate.
Okay. Thanks, Tom, and have a great day. Thanks, Rob. Thanks for the call, Rob. What's up?
Morning. So Passover was when, like you said, the firstborn of Egypt were being slaughtered, and so the Jews put the lamb's blood over the threshold to prevent the ghosts from killing them. And at that same time, but later in history, was when Jesus was executed. And so there's another word called posh. It's a Latin and Greek thing, and it signifies the resurrection of Jesus on Resurrection Sunday. And I think through time, posh got kind of conglomerated in with Passover for a lot of people. But what we're really celebrating as Christians is resurrection on Sunday, not painting Easter eggs and celebrating Easter Bunny. That is the pagan part of it. And I think it's a big mistake to laugh that off, for the judgment of the country.
Well, so are you saying that basically just celebrating Easter is going to bring judgment from God?
Didn't it bring judgment from God when the Jews built the golden calf?
Well, I mean, the answer to that is going to be there's a large number of people in the country who celebrate Easter because it's the resurrection of Christ. So, I mean, you can't criticize those people, can you?
If it's not the religion, then no, because they're the uninformed. But for actual Christians to celebrate by painting eggs and eating chocolate Easter bunnies, I think that's a mistake.
All right. Well, anyway, folks, Rob, you're saying don't make the mistake of eating chocolate and coloring eggs.
Yeah.
All right.
No chocolate on Easter Sunday, people.
How about Easter Monday? Can they get back into their bag of chocolates?
You betcha.
Okay, thanks for the call, Rob. All right, folks, I've got another little crank call for you here, speaking of birth. Ricky Smiley, paternity test. Oh, well, actually, this is Ricky Smiley, baby mama drama. This is pretty good.
Hello.
Yes, is this the Evans residence?
Yes, it is. How may I help you?
This is Bernice down here at the Montel Jordan OBGYN Clinic for Women.
Uh-huh.
And I was calling to say congratulations on your ultrasound on yesterday, and it is a boy. You said you wanted to know, didn't it?
Oh, I think you have the wrong number.
No. Is this the cell number that he put on here? Is Mike Evans your husband?
Yes, he is my husband.
Yes.
But you said you're calling from where, I'm sorry?
Montel Jordan OBGYN Clinic for Women.
Oh, you haven't misunderstood. I'm not pregnant.
Well, he came in there with you yesterday.
I didn't come into a clinic yesterday.
Hold on. Let me... Your husband, Mike Evans... I'm sorry. Mike Epps. Mike Evans, that works over at United Parcel Service.
Yeah, that's my husband.
Yeah. Y'all came in on yesterday.
No, he and I didn't come in the clinic yesterday.
And this is cell phone?
Yeah, he left his cell phone here today, and, I picked it up, but he was at the clinic yesterday?
Yeah, down here at the OBGYN for Women's Clinic.
Who was he there with?
You. I reckon him. This is the number that he left. I was just calling to get y'all the results.
Okay, so I'm his wife, and he was there with... somebody else, I presume.
Did you piss in a cup?
I'm telling you that I'm not pregnant. That's not me. I can't get pregnant. I wasn't peeing on no stick, and my husband was there.
Is you light-skinned?
No, I'm not. Who the hell was he with? Wait a minute. He was there with some light-skinned chick?
You might need to give him a call because he didn't raw dog somebody.
Oh, my God. Are you serious right now?
He raw dog somebody because she's pregnant down here. And they left with a cell phone number on there, and they got house and cell number.
You know what? Don't even, you have his work phone number. Don't even call him at work, because I'm about to blast his ass right now. Are you serious? This is some bullshit.
I'm not trying to be missed. I don't keep up
with
it because
it.
I'm saved.
I cannot believe. What's your name?
I'm Bernice down here at the Montel Jordan OBGYN for Women's.
Montel Jordan? Oh, my God.
Yeah, do y'all use protection?
No.
clear?
It's Kelly here, and we got a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly Connell Show. Who's this?
Sorry, Kelly, for being a pest. But
Blood Moon number 4 just called in, folks.
Kelly, I just want to know, what do you think is going to happen on states' rights when this vote comes up in the Supreme Court?
For what?
For, you know, this gay marriage thing.
I have no idea.
Or same sex. I mean, that's coming up in April, right?
I don't know. I mean, if the Supreme Court threw it back to the states, then it would support places like Indiana and Connecticut and Mississippi and all these other places for having their own laws about this. I mean, America is supposed to be a place where you have freedom of belief. So, I mean,
could it be the end of liberty if this thing?
I guess it could be. Mike, thanks for the 4 calls, the 4 blood moons. Have a great Easter. All right, folks. The thing is that I had a thought, but Mike's last call destroyed it. But let's see if I can. All right, this thing with if you come to some place, I was just kind of thinking about this, like how this would work out if they put this law out there. If you went to a place, if a person went to a place, said, "I want to hire you for something. I want to get the service or whatever." And the individual says, "I don't want to help gay people. You know, I'm a Christian or Muslim or whatever." It seems to me that there would have to have been something said or done that made it obvious that this person was gay, like a gay marriage. I'm coming to you. I want a cake with two men kissing on it or whatever, the village people in the background. So I think that, you know what, I don't think this is a law where people would avoid doing business with gays. If it does have a gay angle on it, I think it's a law where people would not want to support things like gay marriage. That's what I think the law is about. That's why I think it's much ado about nothing. I do not think it is, because I've known a lot of Christians in my life, and I just don't remember anybody coming up and saying, "I don't like gay people. I don't want to interact with them." A lot of Christians are concerned that gay people are saved and they want a chance to talk to them about that type of stuff. But I've never heard, I mean, I've heard a few sermons on, you know, I probably found them on the internet, but a few sermons on homosexuality. But in terms of gay people being a problem that need to be avoided, that is not a Christian theme. Just not. So I don't believe that this law, I think the law is meant to give people the right to not support publicly things that they're totally opposed to. That's just my take on it, though. We're running out of time here, and so I appreciate you joining me today. And I'm going to bring on a little bit of facts, what facts we have for tomorrow. For we're going to do I have somebody in on talk about this astronomy stuff, but talk tomorrow about what facts we do know about the Passover and such. Kelly O'Connell, and take you out with George Strait. All my exes live in Texas. Have a great day. KOBE, ciao.
Rosanna down in Texarkana wanted me to push her broom. Sweet Eileen in Abilene, she forgot I hung the moon. And Allison in Galveston somehow lost her sanity. And Dimples, who now lives in Temple's, got the law to get for me. All my exes live in Texas. And Texas